All right, folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network, and I'm excited to talk about last night's Denver Nuggets win as the Nuggets defeat the Toronto Raptors. Final score, 125-119. A really, really impressive performance from your Denver Nuggets in the second half. Not necessarily in the first half, and that's okay. But look, I have already said my piece on how seriously I think Denver needs to take this stretch. Not super seriously, and I think everybody's got to sort of recalibrate their expectations for how Denver is going to approach these final few games, these final 17 games of the season. We'll talk about that in segment three, but most importantly, in these first initial stretches here for segments one and two, we get to talk about Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray just being unbelievably good. And even though it's not necessarily the perfect way for them to handle things in the first half, you got to see that dominance on full display last night. And it's always great to have a nice little reminder there for sure. Really fun to see, really good to see. And I hope every Nuggets fan is having a great day. If you can, if you're new to the program, please like and subscribe to the video down below. That would absolutely help. And if you're on the audio side, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. That would help us out tremendously. I just got word before going too far, I got word just now that we are going to be doing another number 38 takeover. At number 38, we're doing a Nuggets watch party. I think they're, I don't exactly know what the correct terminology is for those, but I went to number 38 a couple weekends ago, had a great time, a lot of fun, a lot of enjoyable atmosphere there. And it's always great to be able to hang out with the fellas, to be able to get some drinks and watch a Nuggets game. And we're going to do it tomorrow night, Wednesday night, for the Miami Heat. I will probably be out there at that one. I don't see why I wouldn't. So if you want to meet me in person, if you want to meet the Mile High Sports crew, then make sure to go check it out. And we'll have plenty of good setups. We've got some good deals there. So make sure to check that out if you are interested. All right. Let's go over the game last night. If anybody follows me, if anybody listened to the last episode of the show, you know exactly how I felt about this Toronto game. I thought there was a distinct chance that Denver would lose. I thought there was a distinct chance that they wouldn't take it seriously. And that looked very prophetic at the end of the first half, where Denver was down, I think, 17 points at that point. They ultimately won. They ultimately came back because they are the Nuggets, and they were facing a team that they were 17-point favorites over by the tip-off of last night's game. Obviously, the Toronto Raptors were without Scottie Barnes, Jakob Poeltl, Gary Trent Jr., Emmanuel Quickley. There are plenty of names that you know that they were without, and it was why Denver was such a big home favorite. It's also why Denver thought, I think, rightly or wrongly, that they could kind of lollygag into that game, not necessarily bring the best effort. And Michael Malone, after the game, was very much on the train that Denver, like, the only thing that changed between the first half and second half was the amount of effort that Denver put in. And there's some truth to that. I don't know if I'd necessarily identify it as entirely effort-based, but what you saw was a Nuggets team that, when they need to, they will turn it on. They'll turn on the entire Jets, everything that they've got, and it starts with Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. In that first half, I think Murray hit, and Rob says it here, I think Murray had, what, 6 points, 5 points, something like that, at the end of the first half. But him hitting that late three off of a Jokic kickout was a big, big shot. It took Denver's deficit from down 20 to down 17. And there was at least a little bit of momentum heading into the into halftime that, okay, Denver, you take it seriously. You were 17-point favorites at the beginning of this. The Nuggets have overcome worse, and they have. Like, that's exactly how they should have been approaching it in the second half. I have qualms with them approaching it as lazily as they did in the first half, but you just got to understand that that's how it's going to be, and that's how it's going to be for these final 17 games or so. you're going to see a lot of these kinds of performances where Denver doesn't take it seriously, and sometimes they'll come back, and sometimes they'll get burned. And that's just kind of how it is. But up until that point, I thought that Aaron Gordon did a good job of helping keep Denver in the game. He was very engaged. He finished the game shooting 8 of 9 from the field and was a beast on the inside when Denver could get him the ball. But the defense overall for the team was horrible. Like, Denver was just not playing that great. And Murray was kind of apathetic at the beginning of this on both ends of the floor, not necessarily putting a ton of pressure on the opposing team early on in this game. And then Jokic's defense was bad. Like, I know that he finished, and the crazy thing is he finished with 6 steals and 2 blocks. The vast majority of that was in the second half. I think he had 4 steals and 2 blocks in the second half alone, 4 steals in the third quarter alone, and you just saw what it looks like when he turns it up. In the first half, Kelly Olynyk is splashing jumpers. Jontay Porter's making a two-way impact against him. Like, Jontay Porter, brother of Michael Porter. It was good to see him play. Don't get me wrong. And Michael Porter was very, very happy to see him play well. But it was also one of those things where, yeah, Nikola Jokic is kind of letting Jontay Porter do what he wants, and that's not how it should go. So it was good to see him turn it around. And I think Harrison Wind had this stat. Let me just go check my retweets here. Jokic in the third quarter last night, 19 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and 1 block. Let me read that again. Nikola Jokic in 12 minutes, he played all 12 minutes in that third quarter, 19 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block. That is a full game stat line for so many people. So many people. You pick a wing that you like. Let's say RJ Barrett for the other side. That's a great game for RJ Barrett. And Jokic did it in the third quarter. Like, when he turns it up, there are very few players that can match what he does. And Denver took that deficit from down 17 at the midway point to down 5 heading into the fourth quarter. And at that point, you felt very good about what Denver could do for the rest of the way. And Jamal Murray leads that fourth quarter charge. He does a great job of getting Denver into their stuff. Had 12 points and 6 assists in the fourth quarter alone. Mall was great. And him being able to flip the switch like that, Porter said that himself, by the way, in the postgame. He said he doesn't know of anybody in the NBA that can flip a switch like Jamal can. And it's true. Like, we've seen this over and over and over again from him. And it's just funny that that's how it goes. Murray leads the fourth quarter, hits some crazy shots, creates some wide open shots for the rest of his teammates as well, had some great passes. The pass to Zeke Nnaji for the dunk, where he kind of leveraged the weak side rotation guy. He dragged the defense over, pulled 2 to him, and then put the guy in weak side rotation in hell, trying to figure out whether he was going to kick it out to the weak side shooter or if he was going to dump it off to Zeke. Ultimately dumped it off to Zeke for a wide open dunk. That was great to see. And then he kicked it out to Peyton Watson for a 3, set up Michael Porter for a 3, set up KCP for a 3. Like, he's doing a great job. He set up Jokic multiple times as well. And then he's hitting these crazy shots as well. Like, these one-legged mid-range jumpers, these up-and-unders from the free throw line. Like, he was in his bag. And even the shots that he missed, they looked like they were going down. It was a complete takeover from him. And Denver starters, they just close the game together in clutch time, because you get to a clutch time situation and you know that Denver feels good in that. You know that there's no questions about what they're going to go to in those situations. They're going to try to get to the Jokic-Murray two-man game. They're going to set up Jokic in the middle. They're going to have Murray kind of roam around on the perimeter around him and then cut to their lane. And he did exactly that. Just a really, really impressive game from both Jokic and Murray ultimately. Jokic finishes the game. Let me just pull this up here. 35 points, 17 rebounds, 12 assists, 6 steals, 2 blocks. He turned it up defensively, and that made the entire difference for Denver. Murray, in nearly 40 minutes, 26 points, 12 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, was a team high plus 15. And that's exactly what you need. You need Murray to be leading in these situations. And something that we've seen over the course of these last couple weeks, especially while the bench has taken a positive turn, is that Murray is really starting to lead that group in a better, more efficient way. Especially when he's out there as the only point guard. The lineup that Denver has gone to of Murray, Justin Holiday, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Zeke Nnaji has been pretty consistent. Now, Reggie Jackson was a team worst minus 7, and he continues to struggle. He made some shots in that second half. I think he made 3 of his 4 or 5 shots or whatever. But he's still not looking right, and he's still not impacting the game in any other way other than his scoring. Zeke Nnaji only had, like, the line for Zeke Nnaji is hilarious. Just listen to this. 2 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals, 1 block, 1 of 2 from the field, and it was on the dunk that Murray kind of force-fed him. He's got to do a better job of impacting the game all around, grabbing some rebounds. Toronto grabbed 11 offensive rebounds last night, and Zeke grabbed 0 defensive rebounds, though he only played 9 minutes, so I'm not going to sit here and belabor the point. But overall, it just feels like Murray's doing a great job of setting up Christian Brown, Peyton Watson. Justin Holiday didn't get shots up, but he generally looks for Justin Holiday too. And Denver's just in a really good spot right now with this bench unit. And it comes back to, is Jamal going to be the guy who leads that group, who makes sure to prop it up and puts enough pressure on the defense so that those other guys can flourish? There was one possession where he kicks the ball out to Peyton Watson for 3, and he's just staring at the help coming off of Peyton Watson's guy because that guy just can't wait to double him. He's not even in the post, really. He's just kind of like mid-post, facing up, not necessarily doing anything crazy, and he just kicks the ball out to a wide-open Peyton Watson who has plenty of time to set his feet and fire, and Peyton Watson hits the shot. Peyton Watson's jumper looked pretty good last night. That I do want to mention, too. Really, really impressive game from P-Watt on both ends of the floor, I thought. 1 steal, 1 block, 7 points, 4 rebounds. And I think all 3 of his shots were jumpers. He's got to make his free throws, but is what it is. But just really, really impressive night from Denver all around. KCP hits a big shot to end the game, basically. It was the only shot that he hit, but he had 6 assists and played decent defense himself. And Michael Porter, who I didn't mention, 8 of 14 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3. Doesn't really feel like he's shooting that well, but then you look at the box score again and you realize he shot 6 of 8 from 2-point range. The dude is cooking. He's in a great spot right now. So Denver's in a great place. They're 9-1 in their last 10. Shouldn't really be a surprise. Should they have gotten down by 22 points? No, of course not. Does it matter? Not really. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about All-NBA because I think that there is an outside chance that Jamal Murray gets an All-NBA nomination this year. And we're going to kind of go over some of the tallies for that in the next segment. But first, everybody, this podcast, as you know, it's brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports, the most trusted name in sports gambling, with a direct line to Las Vegas. You can win some money with promo code MILEHIGH as you score up to $250 with their first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter that promo code, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit Superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll. And we're back. Pickaxe and Roll. Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into the show. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Always try to go live. I try to do 4 shows a week at this point. Not really doing 5 anymore, and that's fine. Nobody needs to see me 5 times. But trying to do 4 shows a week, doing a Weekends with Swipa show, which was very popular over the weekend. That was a great show that we had. And I'm not sure what the schedule's going to look like this week because Denver's going to be on a... They're on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday schedule. So my guess is that I will do a Weekends with Swipa on Saturday, and then I'll do 1 weeknight show. We will see when that actually happens, but should be fun. All right, let's get back to it. Ben Mack says it's been a wild ride being a Nuggets fan, wouldn't have it any other way. Firmly agree. Last night, I think, is a good kind of example of Denver's at least entertaining, and they get down and they put themselves into a pretty bad position. But the energy in the building, like, Matt Moore turned to me, or I actually know it was Adam Morris who was sitting next to me. Shout out to Adam, who doesn't get out to a whole bunch of games. Adam was sitting next to me and he was like, Denver should probably, like, Nuggets fans should probably boo in this situation. Like, they're not playing well. And to Nuggets fans' credit, they never booed. I think everybody had a reasonable amount of faith that they would be able to come back. And Denver was on the precipice of coming back in that third quarter. They didn't firmly play that great in the third quarter because they couldn't get enough stops, but they scored like 42 points. And then they ultimately clamped down in the fourth to make it a firm comeback. But Nuggets fans, I think, have really borne this out pretty well. I think there's a lot of trust right now between the Nuggets and Nuggets fans. And Nuggets fans know exactly what they're getting in those situations, which is pretty cool. That's a pretty cool thing to see. All right, let's get into All NBA, because this is kind of a fun, interesting conversation I didn't think I would ever be having right now. Jamal Murray missed 14 games early on in the season. It was pretty clear that that was going to be a problem, and I basically cut out All NBA considerations at that point because it just didn't really make much sense to consider it beyond, like when you lose that many games to injury, I'm not expecting him to play the entire rest of the season. Nobody should. That's not really what the expectation should be. And here's the thing, like, by game 25 of the season, he had already missed 14 games. And then he goes on and plays the next 30 games in a row, I think. I think that's the number. 29 games in a row. And then he misses one due to injury. And then he comes back and plays versus Washington, plays okay. Then he misses another due to rest after the All-Star break. And he hasn't missed a game since, despite the fact that against Miami. The 14 minutes that he played against Miami, I'm not sure if that count. He did actually play in that one. Okay, that's going to still count towards his total. That's only if he's below the 65-game threshold that we really start to get into some of those logistics, but he's okay on that front. So far, he has played 49 out of Denver's 65 games, which means that he's missed 16. In order to make All-NBA, you cannot miss more than 17 games. So Jamal has one more game of wiggle room between now and the end of the season. And yet I didn't think, okay, he didn't make All-Star. He already has missed all this time. Even if he does qualify for games played, I didn't really consider the possibility that he might actually be in All-NBA conversations. But that was part of the conversation over the weekend and last night, is that he might be making an All-NBA push. Tim Bontemps was in town to watch Nuggets Celtics, and he had been talking about him as a fringe All-NBA guy, somebody who he would consider because of how good he has been, because of the games missed for other guys, like Donovan Mitchell over the weekend. I think actually it was last night. He's officially disqualified. And there are plenty of other guys that you could point to that are going to be disqualified from All-NBA. One of the things that helps Jamal in this situation is because the NBA has made their All-NBA teams positionless now, Jamal's not fighting against all of these guards that would be ahead of him in these conversations. And so here I'm going to try to explain that by sharing with you who I would pick right now for All-NBA teams. First team All-NBA for me starts with Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Luka Doncic. Those are the four locks that I would say I have for the first team. Those are the four guys that are in MVP conversations. They have been the best players this year. Embiid would be on this list if he qualified. He's obviously not going to. And that's kind of that. Like, those are the four main guys. Then you've got three other candidates for the top level in Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, and LeBron James, surprisingly. I was pretty shocked about that. LeBron's been great. LeBron has been individually awesome. And the way that he has sort of raised his level has put him into this conversation I did not expect him to have. But I'm not going to ultimately put him there. I think I'll put Kevin Durant in this list. He's been pretty healthy. He has been dynamic. He's been the best mid-range shooter in the game. And he's carrying a pretty heavy burden on both ends of the floor for a Suns team that, while they're not very good, they have been missing Bradley Beal and Devin Booker for significant periods of time. And it's been all a lot on Kevin Durant. And I think Phoenix is going to elevate out of the play-in. So really impressive from him. Second team All-NBA includes two of Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, LeBron James. One of them will be first team. The other two will be second team for me. And then I've got three other guys that I think are above the rest, I think, in Kawhi Leonard, Stephen Curry, and Anthony Edwards. Kawhi Leonard, because he's actually playing enough to really qualify for this, and he's kind of back to that level where you could see, okay, he's kind of a fringe candidate here for not really MVP, but with the way that he has played, with the way the Clippers have looked so far this season, I think he deserves a nod on one of these teams. Steph Curry, because he's Steph Curry. I wonder whether this ankle injury that Steph has sustained will take him out of these All-NBA conversations. I think he's avoided major injury, but it wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't crack the 65-game threshold, this spot could potentially open. And then Anthony Edwards, who, like, he's been great. He's been great so far this season. His numbers, he's like 26-5-5. He's mostly efficient. He's been on the team that's the best defense in the NBA. Obviously, he's not the leading contributor to that defense, but he is a contributor to that defense. And he, like, despite the fact that they've lost Karl Anthony Towns, like, the plays that he made over the weekend in that game against, it wasn't Cleveland, it was, who was it? Was it Indiana? I don't remember. But the block that he had at the end was just unbelievable. So he could make some of these amazing plays, and he scored 40 that night. So he's been very, very good, and I think deserves this spot. Third team is obviously where things get very interesting. You can have a bunch of different names, and nobody's really going to question those names. Here are some ones that I think are not locks, but pretty close. Jalen Brunson leading the Knicks to where they are right now, especially with the injuries to Julius Randle, OG Anunoby after the trade. They've lost Mitchell Robinson. I think Jalen Brunson deserves a spot on the third team. Devin Booker, I think the raw numbers that he's put up as a volume scorer and playmaker for the Suns, and just sort of the pedigree that he has for being a part of this conversation, he's one of the 15 best players in the NBA. I don't think that really needs to be up for debate. He deserves to be in this conversation for sure. And if he does end up qualifying for that 65-game threshold, then I think he will make it. The same goes for Tyrese Halliburton, who was an all-star starter this past all-star for Eastern Conference. I think that he deserves that spot too. The last two spots are really questionable, and this is where Jamal could really factor into that conversation. I came up with six names: Domantas Sabonis, Anthony Davis, Victor Wembanyama, Zion Williamson, Chet Holmgren, and Jamal Murray. Sabonis and Davis are the guys who, if you look at any of the advanced metrics, those are the guys that you'll pick. They have better advanced metrics than Jamal, than even Wemby and Zion and Chet. Like, those are, I think if you're looking at the advanced numbers and if you just have enough volume there, then that matters at least a little bit. In addition, Sabonis has barely missed any time. Anthony Davis has barely missed any time. Those guys have been on the floor for their teams. And there is, like, I think a distinct possibility that, like, if, let's say, Sabonis plays 78 games and Anthony Davis plays 75 games, and Jamal just cracks the threshold at 65 or 66, there is a small, like, little value add for the extra 300 to 400 minutes that those bigs are playing. Like, that's just not surprising. But I think it's close enough now that you could still have that as a question mark. And at that point, it just really comes down to preference. If you're an all-NBA voter, are you looking for the guy that you believe is going to rise up in the playoffs and is not going to make this look stupid for you? Like, hypothetically, you vote Sabonis for all-NBA, and he has a similar playoff run to what he had last year against the Golden State Warriors. Are you going to feel good about that vote? Are you going to feel good about Wemby or Chet as rookies? Who, like, Wemby has won 14, like, the Spurs have won 14 games this year. It's not Wemby's fault. He's clearly the best player on that team and clearly going to be in the all-NBA conversations for a long, long time. Are you going to feel good about Chet, who, like, is a rookie and already, like, you got to put him ahead of a guy like Jamal Murray, who has proven it in the playoffs and proven it in these tough situations? Are you going to give credit to Chet Holmgren for stepping up in this situation as a rookie? That, like, he deserves credit for that, to be clear. Does he deserve more credit than one half of the best dynamic duo in the NBA? I don't know. And then Zion is one where that's so ambiguous for all of these conversations. Like, it's really, really tough to both argue for and against Zion Williamson because everybody is going to have their takes about him. Like, he is a number one option for the Pelicans in a lot of ways, but he's also not, because guys like Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum are also creating a whole bunch, are also doing a whole bunch for that team. But maybe that team does need an all-NBA representative, because if you look at the standings lately, they've been very, very good. The Pelicans are fifth. They've won four in a row. They're 7-3 in their last 10, and they are closer now to the Clippers than I think people realize. They're only 2 wins and 3 losses back of the Clippers for the 4 seed. So it has been very interesting to monitor that and to see them kind of go under the radar. And does Zion deserve some credit for that? He's played enough. He's been very good. Maybe he should get that credit. I think if I were choosing this right now, without knowing what happens for the rest of the season, the 17 games for Denver, the remaining games for other teams, I think I would put Sabonis and Anthony Davis on there right now. I think they've been more consistent. I think as bigs, they kind of get overlooked in a lot of ways because they are bigs, because they're not, like, they don't have the ball in their hands a lot. Sabonis, though, does have the ball in his hands. He's averaging over 8 assists per game, averaging the most rebounds in the NBA. He really is Jokic light in a lot of ways. And if Jokic is the best player in the NBA, it's fine to have Sabonis in that, like, third all-NBA kind of tier. And with Davis, he is one of the best defenders in basketball, if not the best. And he also makes an impact in the middle of the Lakers' offense. Maybe not the most impact, but he is almost solely responsible for their defensive prowess. And that says a lot. So I think that's okay to have Murray out. Now, over the course of these next 17 games, Jamal has an opportunity to really campaign for himself and to really push. And I think he will. I think he's going to try. And, like, I think Rob was saying this earlier in the show. Let me just try to pull it up. Love Maul, but giving him a supermax will be detrimental for the future of the Nuggets. Guess we'll see. If he earns it, he earns it. This is part of the conversation for Jamal and for, like, his potential extension. It's why he's going to push. Like, the difference is, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's probably $50 to $60 million over the course of a 5-year deal. And if you have both Jokic and Murray on supermax extensions, it will get pretty difficult for Denver to afford both of those guys. And yet, are you going to break up that duo? No. You might have to make some tough choices in regard to Michael Porter, or probably not Aaron Gordon, but you might not be able to afford bringing back KCP, which would be pretty tough. Like, that would be really, really difficult for Denver. And it's why it's fortunate that they have been developing Peyton Watson, Christian Brown, and to a lesser extent, Julian Strother. So I think in general that Denver is – in a good spot where they might have two All-NBA guys. It would be pretty funny for Jamal to not make All-Star, but to make All-NBA. And he's won a ring first. He'd get All-NBA second, and then you get All-Star third. Usually it goes in the reverse order, where you get All-Star, then All-NBA, then you're a champion. Jamal's doing it backwards, and he kind of always has been. So pretty funny to see, but I think this is a very distinct possibility for him, and he will push for it. Like, Denver will give him every opportunity to do so, but he will push for it. Going to be very fascinating to watch. But hey, let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to wrap up with whether the Nuggets have kind of done enough at this stage. I'm going to go over the schedule, going to go over some magic numbers for the playoffs. Should be fun. All right, final segment. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into the show. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. All right, Denver is currently 45-20. Pretty impressive numbers for them. Pretty impressive record. 9-1 post-All-Star break. Actually, I want to check really quick. Where was Denver at after Game 65 last season? At Game 65, Denver was 46-19 last year. And it's funny, Denver had just defeated the Toronto Raptors by 5 points in a game that should not have been as close as it was, but they defeated the Raptors by 5 points. The very next game, they lost to the Chicago Bulls by 21 points in a game where, just nothing really worked for them. They didn't really care. They weren't really going all out, but it was pretty interesting to see. Kind of mirroring what happened last year between Denver at this point. It's pretty interesting to see where Denver is going to go from here. But obviously with the standings the way that they are, Denver doesn't really have the ability to just take their foot off the gas. They have certain goals that they need to attain in the standings in order to be the best team that they can be, to have the best situation possible heading into the playoffs. And I'm going to pull this up here really quick. Apologies for the janky look, but StreamYard is pretty limited. This is the Western Conference playoff snapshot for Denver that I want to explain really quickly. Denver is in second place in the Western Conference. They are a half game back of the OKC Thunder. OKC has played one fewer game, and they will have an opportunity to either win or lose. If OKC loses, they'll be tied in the standings with Denver. OKC has the tiebreaker, though. The columns that you're going to want to pay attention to on this chart are the magic numbers. Actually, really, games left is a good one to start. Denver only has 17 games left, which means they've only got 17 opportunities for a win. They've only got 17 opportunities for a loss. So they're more closer to being set in stone than some other teams, and they're about to be on a run where they're just playing every other day for the remainder of the season. Going to be interesting to see how they handle it. But the magic numbers are the ones that I really want to pay attention to. Magic numbers, and let me just put myself back on the screen here. Magic numbers are the combination of Nuggets wins or team wins, your team wins, and then opposing team losses. And what that means is that if Denver were to reach a certain magic number, is that the team below them in the standings cannot push higher than them, cannot be seeded higher than them. And so that's why magic numbers are important, because what they tell us is, okay, Denver needs this certain number of wins, this certain number of opponent losses in order to outpace another team. So let me put this back up on the screen. Denver's magic number to be the top six in the top six to avoid the play-in, just look below the line there again at the Sacramento Kings. The Sacramento Kings are 36-27. They're in the seventh seed. What Denver needs to do is be higher seeded than the Sacramento Kings. The Kings can only win 55 games on the year because they've got 19 games left. Let's say they win all of their games remaining. They'd go 55-27. So if Denver is to be above them, they have to have 56 wins. So Denver's magic number is 11 to be a top six seed. You look at the other columns in that chart. Top four, Denver's magic number is 12 combined wins or losses over the New Orleans Pelicans, who are in fifth. And Denver's magic number to be a top one seed is 19. And so Denver's only got 17 games left. That means they need help. They need help in the standings. If OKC were to go 12-6 the rest of the way, that means they'd go 57 wins. They'd be 57-25. That means that Denver needs to have 58 wins because OKC has the tiebreaker. So OKC, if they have six losses, 12-6, six losses, that means that Denver needs 13 wins. That's where that magic number of 19 comes from, if that makes sense to you. The reason why I show that, the reason why I try to explain that for the audience, is to give everybody a perspective on how things are going to go for the rest of the year. Denver's got 17 games left. They have a magic number of 12 to be a top four seed, to have home court advantage in the Western Conference. That is all but guaranteed at this point. The Nuggets, like, their schedule is not crazy. Their schedule is pretty easy for the rest of the year. And if I were Denver, I'd be shooting for at least, if you go 11-6, like, that basically guarantees it. Like, it just means that New Orleans can't go undefeated for the rest of the way, and they won't. So you're basically going to get a top four seed guaranteed. That's where we're at in the season. How good Denver is over the course of the rest of the 17 games will determine which of the four seeds they get, because the Clippers are falling further behind them based off of resting Paul George and Kawhi Leonard a little bit more frequently. They've lost a couple games that they probably shouldn't have lost. It's clear that the Clippers are probably going to be the four seed, depending on if Minnesota, kind of because of Karl-Anthony Towns' absence, if they really falter, then maybe there's a possibility that the Clippers get the three seed. But I sort of think that the Clippers are going to get the four, Minnesota's going to get the three, and Denver and OKC are going to vie for the one and two seeds. Now, Denver's got to put in the work. OKC's not going to roll over for them to give up the one seed. And Minnesota's not going to roll over because they're going to try to get a top two seed. They're going to try to get home court advantage. They're going to try to get the best seeds possible for them. So Denver's still got to work. And so this next four-game road trip that Denver is on, for at Miami, at San Antonio, at Dallas, at Minnesota, that is where, like, that's going to determine, like, how they handle it will determine which of the four seeds they get. If they go 0-4, which is, I guess, possible. Probably, it's unlikely, but it's possible. If they go 0-4, then the four seed is clearly in play. If they go 1-3, the three seed is probably where they will end up at. If they go 2-2, they're probably still on track for a two seed. If they go 3-1, probably still on track for a two seed. If they go 4-0 on this upcoming stretch, there is a distinct possibility that they get the one, because OKC's strength of schedule for the rest of the season is pretty tough. They've got a lot of plus 500 teams that are competing for playoff spots themselves, and they got to face some of those teams on the road. They got to face some of those teams on back-to-backs. So OKC, they've got some pressure. Denver's going to apply some pressure, and if they can do it successfully and OKC loses a game or two that maybe they shouldn't, then that, like, 12-6 number that I kind of penciled them in at, Denver's just got to go 14-4 for the remainder. They've got to go 13-4. They've got to go 13-4 for the rest of the season in order to outpace OKC if they go 12-6. So Denver's in a pretty good spot. Like, they're going to have to push, and depending on how hard they push, they could get a one seed. And if they do get a one seed, then a lot of the narratives start falling into place. Jokic MVP, Jamal All-NBA, Denver having home court advantage for the Western Conference playoffs, probably not like in the NBA finals, unless Boston gets eliminated, in which case Denver would have home court over every team in the NBA in a playoff run, which that would be a big deal once again. So I think this is very, very interesting. This is going to be a fascinating thing to see how they handle it. And I think Jamal is going to play every game because we talked about the All-NBA aspect of this. Jamal's not going to want to sit. He's going to want to play. He's going to want to qualify. So if that's the case, he's going to play hard. He's going to try to up those numbers. He's going to try to get Denver wins. And might be a formula there for Denver to really sort of ramp up. And to, despite the fact that they may not be playing super hard heading into these next few, they might just get them anyway. Because Miami, San Antonio, Dallas, Minnesota, like, Miami's not playing the best basketball lately. San Antonio's obviously not a great team, although they're dangerous with Wemby. Dallas is playing pretty hard, but like Denver's still got answers for them. And then Minnesota's now without Karl Anthony Towns. So I'm very curious to see how Denver handles this. There's a possibility that they go 4-0. And if they did go 4-0, that would really change a lot of things. Joker's going to be great. Like, he might be a little bit more apathetic at times because I don't think he's as concerned about some of this stuff as maybe Jamal will at the end. And Denver doesn't need to be a certain seed in order to win a title. It just helps. It's just a positivity thing for going into a playoff series. Hey, you've got the one seed. And as long as Denver's healthy, that's what matters most. Health matters above all. That's pretty clear. Denver's not going to go all out for this. Even Murray will not go all out for this in order to like just get all NBA and kind of sell out on a possible playoff run. I think everybody's in lockstep. Everybody's going to take it game by game. And if Murray feels good enough to play, he'll probably play. And if Denver feels good enough with their starters and with the health of everybody, they're probably not going to sit those guys unnecessarily. They might get a maintenance day here or there, but it's probably not going to be all at the same time, and it's probably not going to be as consistently as maybe people thought. So I'm curious to see how it works. I think everybody's in a pretty good spot, and the Nuggets themselves are looking pretty good at this point. So should be very fascinating. Folks, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll. If you missed it earlier, we are going to be having a watch party at number 38 once again, the one that I talked about on this show previously. We had a great time when we were there. I'll be there on Wednesday night, sort of hosting and directing and probably doing a post-game show from number 38. We'll be very, very interested to see how that goes against the Miami Heat tomorrow night. Thank you so much for tuning in. I would love it if you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, support the work that we do at MHS. It means the world. It means the world to me especially. And I can't wait to continue to put out this great content for you guys. So everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, hit that like button on the way out. I will talk to you guys very soon.